It's time for JT the Brick.
So we move on to the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference Finals.
It's on to Milwaukee.
Giannis Antetokounmpo is ready to smash him.
Down to Giannis. 3 seconds. He drives. Lays it in.
You would think that Milwaukee would be really rested and ready, and they'd want to take care of business. And Kawhi Leonard's shot is a shot that we'll be talking about for the rest of our lives.
Is this the dagger?
With a wink and a nod to Giannis Antetokounmpo, but does Kawhi stay in Toronto? The only team I believe that can give the Warriors a fight and even take them to six games and will lose is Milwaukee. The only thing that I said before, I'll say it again, is that the Warriors have already won the NBA title.
JT the Brick.
Now the question becomes, can Portland get a game from the Warriors? It's tough. Portland, 19 years. Obviously, the Warriors, a heavy favorite to get back to the NBA Finals. Some people just think the Warriors are going to smash them. Toronto's not good enough. Portland's not good enough. But, hey, I've been wrong in the past.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT. Good to have you today. Thursday, opening round of the PGA Championship, where I went to high school in Farmingdale, New York. I went to Farmingdale High School, and that's where they're playing it. My dad is still on the grounds following Phil Mickelson. We're brought to you by PT's. They have the best happy hour in town. You know it because they have the most taverns in town from 5 to 7, from midnight to 2. They'll catch you anytime. A great place to go and watch the PGA Championship, to get lunch, to get dinner, to go play video poker, to have a corporate event. We appreciate Golden Entertainment, the owner of the Strat, as we kick off the show. I watched most of the golf today, and Brooks Koepka tied the course record and was unbelievable as he shot a 63 at Bethpage Black, one of the toughest golf courses in America to play, period. It's just a brutal test of golf, and he destroyed the golf course. He destroyed the golf course like if you're playing in a golf tournament and they let you play in a scramble and you could use the best ball on every shot. I am shocked with all the rain, the weather, the issues that they had there, that anybody was capable of shooting anything lower than 2 under par. Koepka, from America, that's why we should be rooting for him, shot 7 under 63 on his way to a heavy, heavy first-round lead. He played with Tiger Woods, and he beat Tiger Woods by 9 shots. That's insane. Think about that for a second. He played with Tiger, and he beat him by 9. Holy crap. How did that happen? So for Tiger Woods, and I think you'd agree that playing with Tiger Woods means you're playing under more pressure because Tiger brings the biggest crowds. He's the greatest modern-day golfer, all of that. And Koepka basically looked at him and said, I got this. You're going to chase me all day. So the problem for Brooks Koepka is he has a one-stroke lead over Danny Lee. Tommy Fleetwood, who's really good from England, he has a 4-stroke lead. He shot 3 under. There's still a couple of golfers out on the course. Some of the other big names, Pat Perez, who's tied to the MGM Grand. I see him all the time at the MGM. He birdied 18 to shoot 2 under on the day. I pick Ricky Fowler to win. Ricky Fowler shot 1 under 69. He's tied for 9th. Dustin Johnson is 1 under, along with Jordan Spieth, who had one really bad hole, a double bogey on 10. He ended the day at 1 under, along with Phil Mickelson and Jason Day. Remember, yesterday we had Brady Cannon on, the Golf Insider. He picked Jason Day to win. So the leaderboard looks pretty good. Golf's tough to talk about on the radio because people either love it. If you're driving around with golf clubs in the back of your trunk, if you're playing golf like I am tomorrow, you love the sport. If you're involved in golf, call during the majors or tweet during the majors. We'd love to hear from you. 876-1340 is the number. Problem for Koepka being this good is he doesn't have much of a personality. More of a guy who looks like he lifts weights than plays golf. And he's already won 3 majors. And it looks like he's on pace to win another one. And he doesn't sell the sport at all. He's not a guy that goes out there and he's funny. He had a pretty good press conference the other day. We played some of the sound where he basically said, I'm not in fear of Tiger. And he looks at the field and he knows how to carve the field out one group at a time. But he's not great for selling the sport. And if you look at all the major sports, Steph Curry, who I'm watching now on SportsCenter, you know, he hits a jump shot. He gives you the little shimmy shake. He's got the television commercial. He's got the Facebook new documentary. He's trying to sell the sport, right? He's a champion like Koepka, but he does a little bit more to sell the sport. My analogy is Brooks Koepka is Mike Trout. They're the same guy. They look the same. If Mike Trout walked into a room, I put him on the microphone here, and if I didn't introduce him, you would know it was Mike Trout. Same exact thing with Brooks Koepka. You've never heard him talk. But he could be the guy, the next guy to chase down Tiger Woods and be a double-digit winner of majors when it's all said and done. And what I don't like about Koepka having such a big lead, and it's a big one, over the likes of Tiger and the great golfers, is people in golf root for people to make mistakes. When you watch sports, is there a sport that you watch more than another where you root for people to fail? And what I would mean by that, in football, I think it's number one. What do we root for most? Miss the field goal, right? We all do that. When our team's playing and the other team's kicking a field goal, we say, miss it. We want them to miss it. We get the ball back. We can score. In baseball, I don't notice a lot of people saying, I want you to drop that fly ball, or you won an error. That doesn't happen. But at times, you root for the other guy to strike out. And that's the ultimate failure in baseball, is striking out. You go to hockey, and we got Gary Lawless in studio. We're going to get into hockey today. I'm excited about the conversation we're going to have. What do you want in hockey? What do you root against on another team? You don't want to root for anybody to get hurt. You don't want to root for a penalty from time to time. Vegas just got massively screwed royally on a penalty that ruined the Vegas Golden Knights season. Do you root for the other team to have a penalty? No, you just root for the other goalie to let in goals. But in golf, now you got to root against Brooks Koepka to miss putts, to hit his drive into the woods. I don't like that in sports. I don't like it in golf. This is an American. I protect the American golfers on the radio because I root against the Euros. You ever see when these Europeans beat us in the Ryder Cup what they do? They celebrate and they spray champagne in our locker rooms and they jump up and down and they mock us. They want to beat us. They don't like us. So I don't root for any Tommy Fleetwood. Man, are you nuts? I don't root for any Euro. Jason Day's a nice kid from Australia. I don't mind him, but I'm not rooting for him over any American because they team up to beat us in the Ryder Cup, and they beat us pretty often and pretty convincingly. So Koepka has got a massive lead. He shot 63. Danny Lee's not going to be there at the end, but he's already three ahead of Fleetwood. He's nine ahead of Tiger. He's six ahead of Ricky Fowler, who shot under par. The only way he's going to come back to earth is tomorrow, because tomorrow, if he takes this to 11 or 12 under, this thing's over. This guy can run away and hide because he's so big and strong. Every drive, he hits it over the first group of bunkers, and he's hitting wedge in, and he's a pretty good putter. So that was fun to watch today, the home course where I grew up, Bethpage Black. We'll have more sound tomorrow after this round ends, where we'll get some post-game sound, post-golf sound. I thought Phil Mickelson was great today. Phil was teetering on a bad day, and then Phil was just phenomenal on the back round to get it to one under par. And I really think that Phil Mickelson is going to be in the hunt for this. He sprayed a couple of drives like he always does, but a nice 69 for Jordan Spieth, who, that was surprising. Phil Mickelson, how about this for tied for ninth? Jason Day, Phil Mickelson, Jordan Spieth, and Dustin Johnson, and Ricky Fowler, all at one under. I mean, that's a great leaderboard, unless you look up and you need binoculars to see if we find Brooks Koepka, who is at seven under par. We're going to have Coach Hunky Cooper on, who is going to be inducted into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. He's coming up next. You want to talk about an all-purpose football player. Played offense, defense, quarterback, receiver. He's going in as one of the, if not greatest, Arena League football player to ever play. He coaches at San Diego State. His connection to UNLV should be a really cool interview. He comes up here at 20 after. And then Gary Lawless from the Vegas Golden Knights, from the VGK broadcast, will join us for a half hour, starting at 4:30 to the top of the hour. And then in the next hour of the show, we have the manager, head coach of the Lights, Eric Winalda, in studio. If you're a soccer fan, we'll make it entertaining and interesting. This guy's played all over the world. He was a hell of a soccer player. I'll talk to him specifically on how to grow the sport, the difference between the league that the Lights play in compared to the MLS, compared to the European leagues, what we're doing globally, and how to get better in this sport. I've always said we're not good enough in this sport. The biggest sport in the world, by far, is soccer. We're not any good at it. We need to get better at it. We feed our kids better food. We have more money. There are kids who grow up in other parts of the world, in Africa, in South America, in the Philippines, with nothing. With nothing. They don't even have shoes on. And they develop into being better soccer players than the kids that we have, that we are giving them the best nutrition and the trainers. For whatever reason, we can't catch up with the rest of the world, we'll have that conversation about how can we get better at soccer. Of course, it's an outlier sport. We got great high school soccer players in town. UNLV soccer, we have a lot to be proud of. UNLV soccer is well known, a good team. But how come our soccer players don't have the passion to play at the level that they do around the world where they make more money than Tom Brady? You can't say anymore it's money. Can't say it's money. Because that soccer players make more money than all of our athletes. They make more than LeBron. They make more than Brady, Messi, and Ronaldo. So why wouldn't we try to have a couple of guys do that? Eric Winaldo will join us next hour. NBA preview tonight. The Warriors and the Blazers. I think it's over. Don't you think it's over? I mean, this to me looks like a mismatch. This is a mismatch of epic proportion. But the good news is that the Blazers were gassed and tired from their last game. I expect them to play a much better game tonight. And if they're going to win a game, you got to win at least one game in Oakland in the first two games to get the split, or you're dead. You're just dead. This is the one team you got to beat. I've been telling this to Bobby, who runs the show. It's like the Red Sox. You play the Red Sox in the playoffs, and the first two games are at Fenway. If you don't win one of them at Fenway, you're not going to win the next four out of five against the Red Sox. And it's the same thing with the Warriors, but even more. So tonight, we have a chance to see Portland come in, Damian Lillard, who's from Oakland, to play a great game. To have one of those star-studded games that as a little kid growing up in Oakland and being a Warrior fan, he's got to carry the team on the back tonight. Line opened up, Golden State -7.5. It's down to 6.5 at the Superbook and moved a point. It's still at 7, -7 for Golden State at William Hill. The total on the game is 220.5. So I think you got to like Portland to win outright tonight or cover. Because if you don't, then you have no interest in Portland and just move on and concentrate on the other series. The other series was a fascinating game last night. Man, it was fascinating. Brook Lopez was the best player on the court. He was better than Kawhi Leonard, and he was better than Giannis Antetokounmpo. Nobody saw that coming, but Giannis throughout the game played at an MVP level, but they played pretty good D on him.
George Hill to the rim, no good. Picked up, slam by Giannis. And again, the Bucks make it a three-point game.
You know, I thought the Bucks were outplayed the entire game. I thought they were outplayed the entire game. Toronto did what you needed to do. Go on the road, steal a game. They were the better team for most of the game. But when Brook Lopez, a seven-footer, is comfortably knocking down threes, someone's got to guard this guy.
Giannis blows it down the lane. Passes out to Lopez. A three. Fires it. Bang! Go! 104-100, Splash Mountain delivers his fourth three-pointer of the game.
I mean, he was incredible. This is the Bucks Radio Network. We're talking about a player, Brook Lopez, 35 minutes. He was 4 of 11 from 3 at 29 points, a career playoff high. I want to throw this out to some of the old-timers out there. And what I mean by old-timers is anybody over the age of 50 or 60. Bobby's waving at me. Not the millennials, not the 20s, the ones we want to grow. Everybody around here is desperate. We got to grow the numbers. We got to get one retweet, maybe two likes, and the world will be better again. No, just do a great radio show and worry about it. Now let everybody all worry about the likes and the retweets. But I'll tell you this. When you watch basketball now, do you ever recall a time where great players were 2 feet away from the rim? They're in the paint. They're in the paint. They're elevating. They're only 3-4 feet away from a bucket. And they throw it all the way across court to a guy waiting wide open to shoot a three. I've never seen it like this until now. LeBron is the guy who started it. I remember Magic. Magic in his heyday would cut down the lane, maybe throw something around his shoulder or back to someone who would hit a jump shot. But if Magic was in the lane, he'd want to finish. Kobe would never. You imagine Kobe Bryant attacking the rim and then kicking it out to the corner? Do you ever remember that? Can you find that on YouTube? I can't. But LeBron has changed the game to a point where guys get in the lane. Like, you'll see Draymond Green. He'll attack the rim. He elevates and then, boom, he throws it well into the corner. Klay Thompson hits a three. The league now is so fascinated by an extra point, a three-point play instead of a two-point play. It used to be a two-point bucket and a foul would make a three-point play. But now we'd rather take a 26-foot kickback three because the league is just mesmerized with that shot. And last night, Brook Lopez hit four of them, and it was the difference in the game. I mean, you got to let Brook take that shot. 7-footers out there looking awkward like a Frankenstein trying to take a three. You let him do it, and he knocks it down, and you lose. The change is becoming that the younger kids who can hear me coming back from NJB and JV basketball, they're now so comfortable shooting threes from the NBA and college level that all coaches now don't coach anymore. They just say shoot threes. They're running plays on how to get a guy free for a three. It's not that hard to get a guy free for a three. It's tough to get him free around the rim because you got to do a lot of big things. Back screens. You got to move without the ball. We just don't see it anymore. I wanted to bring that up with Brook Lopez. Great win for the Bucks last night in a game they easily could have lost.
This one's in the bank and earning interest. The final. The Bucks 108. Raptors 100 in game one.
Yeah, fun on the Bucks Radio Network. After the game, Brook Lopez was the star of the game. I didn't think he expected to go to the post-game press conference on the court and back behind the building and be the star.
Yeah, and again, you know, that's what my teammates have been telling me. You know, I know George Hill specifically, and then this guy too, just stick in my mind. Just, you know, keep shooting the ball. You just need one to go down. Keep letting it fly. And, you know, that one felt good. You know, I had two other ones that felt like they were right there, but you know, our team's just, you know, we just stick with it. You know, we all struggled a bit shooting the ball, but, you know I did. And, you know, I'm so thankful to have a group of teammates that support me 100%, you know, regardless if it's going in or out. They just want me to keep going out there and doing my job.
That's a great soundbite. There's a guy basically saying that I've been average my whole career, and my teammates are telling me shoot threes. I mean, you're kidding me? The guy's basically saying I'm 7 foot. I don't shoot much well from the outside, but everyone says, hey, man, we got confidence in you. Keep shooting. And Kyle Lowry played great. Kawhi disappeared in that game. Kawhi actually disappeared the final minutes of that game, which I was a bit surprised from. I think you could say you got to give him a pass, right? He hit the game seven buzzer beater to win the game. He disappears the final 5 minutes of a game because he's tired. What are you going to do? You're going to sit there and throw Kawhi under the bus? Well, if Kawhi was able to take that game over, Raptors win. They were the better team. How about this for a stat? Milwaukee outscored the Raptors 32-17 in the fourth quarter. Game was over. Toronto had that game, and they were completely dominated at the end. That's the monologue brought to you by the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, Boulder Highway, 460 North Boulder Highway in Henderson. The super deals that you're looking for, Nevada's number one Hyundai dealer, period. The best selection, the biggest selection in town. Welcome to the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, serving the entire Las Vegas Valley. The crossovers, the SUV, the new Hyundai cars, you won't believe the selection. Head on out and see Frank on Boulder Highway in Henderson.
I mean, I want to be a Cowboy forever. I think the people that are doing the deal feel the same way. So to me, it's no rush. I know it'll get done.
Do you see?
But as far as the numbers concerned, my focus is to win the locker room. I know I'll get taken care of, so it is what it is.
Dak Prescott wants to get paid. Big discussion on how much do you pay him. Is he elite, super elite, a guy? Big cap hit for the Cowboys coming up. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. I really appreciate that a partner, and I mean a partner. We have a lot of them, especially showcasing them this week from Coaches versus Cancer. But now the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, we've been exclusively getting first all of their inductees who are coming in here. We're able to talk to them. And Hunky Cooper joins us right now, the coach at San Diego State University, the great wide receiver coach, and one of the more impactful football players that you'll ever hear from. He joins us on the Las Vegas Sports Network. Coach, congratulations. Thanks for giving us a few minutes. How are you?
I appreciate it. How about you guys? I'm doing great, Jake.
Really good. I can't wait to get into it. As I was looking at your bio and doing some homework on you, growing up in Texas and before you even attended Westwood High School, when was someone able to figure out that you were an all-purpose athlete and could play multiple positions? Who led you down that road?
Tell you what, there was a guy that when I lost my father, there was a guy named Jack, Mr. Jack Estes. He used to pick us up for baseball practice, and we played football and played basketball, and it just became that, you know. And then it transferred over to Coach Paul Tabor, my high school football coach. And in Texas, you play football, or you go to football off season, or you go to every sport. And it was a time of my life growing up in the projects of East Texas with you know, 9 siblings, man. So I had to be good at something, and so I had to try them all.
That's my follow-up. I assume that you played multiple sports, so you encourage that today because we see a lot of one-sport athletes and club ball, and guys play one-sport kids year-round. It seemed like you gravitated to all the sports until you were discovered as a great football player.
I agree. I don't think you really find yourself till your sophomore, junior year in college, and I played with some really, really good dudes. And you know, John Randall was my roommate in junior college. I played with Pat Mahomes, senior. And believe it or not, we averaged between 28 and 29 points a game, 28 and 30 points a game with no three-point line as basketball players. And we were both named to all East Texas basketball teams and had basketball offers. And at DeVera Junior College, I played football, baseball, and basketball. So you kind of continue to do that because, again, having nine siblings and you know, lost a parent, and my mom was a maid for 25 years. So we had to find – education wasn't going to come free for me unless we earned it. And I'm grateful that the guys that came into my life when they did, the coaches, is who put me on that path, and I could never repay them monetarily. So that's why I coach, and that's why I gave so much in football, baseball, and basketball, because it put me around like-minded people and gave me an opportunity to be successful as an athlete, but more so as a person.
Hunky Cooper is our guest, Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, class of 2019. So that's interesting to me. I want to get into the junior college years, the national championship, and then the transfer to UNLV. What were those decisions like for you? You're playing big-time football. You're making friends, brothers for life, but obviously looking at the bigger picture ahead, how were you recruited? How did that process come about?
I was recruited to go play basketball at Lon Morris Junior College in Jacksonville, Texas, which is no longer a school. And but I was only 5'7" at 5'8" coming out of high school, so I was trying to be realistic. And I was an option quarterback, and I was pretty good at football, and I was always third best. There was a guy named Ivory Lee Brown, who's the uncle of Adrian Peterson, and another guy named Pee Wee Simmons, who was probably one of the fastest guys I ever played with, and was my cousin. We all grew up in the same projects, but. Again, I with the skill set, I had a different mindset. I always wanted to. People told me I couldn't play quarterback, so my deal wasn't to go out and prove all them wrong. It was to prove myself right. So I played quarterback, and then when I got to junior college, the basketball team was lacking some guards, and Coach Orr said, "Come out and play basketball." So I went out and I played basketball, and I played against guys like Robert Pack and David Benoit, and then I played baseball. So I played baseball through my junior college years, and then we were. At Navarro College, we were undefeated. We went 10-0 and were the national champions in 1989. And then the offers started to come. I had the opportunity to go to University of Houston, where Kevin Gilbride and Jack Pardee was at the time. I had an opportunity to go to some schools in Louisiana, and David Rader was at Tulsa. And then UNLV staff came in, and they went and talked to my mom. And really vital in that recruiting process was Jeff Horton and a guy named Paul Pucciarelli, who was the equipment guy. You know, we had a really, really good staff with Chuck Pagano and Jim Strong was our head coach. But we had Tom Cable, we had Scott Linehan, who was a coordinator for the Cowboys. We had a really, really good staff, and they were good men as well. And coming to UNLV, I thought was a perfect fit for me. I could come in, I could play right away, and that's what happened. I came in and became the quarterback, and then I played punt return, kick return, and I played covered kicks, and then I played DB, and then I played slot. And the rest became history, and that was just setting me up for the Arena Football League. But the transition was good. It was smooth. Got a great education at UNLV. Had some really, really good teammates that are still in my life today. And obviously, I'm still working with Coach Jordan right now, 30 years later. And, you know, all those guys came into my life were so impactful that I grew up and I raised my family basically in the Las Vegas area. So it's been a great run for me.
Hunky Cooper's our guest. It's an amazing story. Talk about a story from coming from Texas to UNLV to junior college to the highest level. Then you get to the Arena Football League, and you're playing for the Rattlers. And I look at the run that you had during that span from 93 to 2005. You were the best player. You excelled at every level when it came to being the league MVP, punt returns, kickoff returns, the way you were able to play as an explosive player. An Arena Bowl champion in 94 and 97. What was that world like for you? Did you love it? Was it harder than? Clearly, you had visions of the NFL as a kid. You get in here and you start to dominate.
Yeah, I went to the CFL first, and then I was like, you know what? That's not for me. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to go back to school, finish my degree, and I wanted to go to law school. And then a guy named Pete Catella just kept showing up at my job and saying, you know, come down and play arena football. Didn't even know about arena football. Went down and played with the Arizona Rattlers, and Danny White was my coach and mentor. And my rookie year, I had 1,400 yards receiving and 1,400 yards in return on a 50-yard field, and that was caught the eye of the New Orleans Saints, and they took me into camp and everything with them, and I was with the Saints in 93, 94, and then I went back to Canada, to Toronto, and it was just football, and I consider myself a football player, not a position player, but I played the game, and it was something that I'd done my whole life, so I'm returning the ball off the net, you know, with your back to guys 200, 300 pounds coming down the field, you know, you just had to trust your guys, and when we talk about the accolades and the yardage and the all the accolades as an Arizona Rattler, that just meant I worked for a great organization with the Colangelos and had great leadership from Danny White and Todd Shell, and then my teammates, Randy Gatewood and Greg Gale, those are, you know, all former UNLV Rebels as well, Doc Weiss. And so the game was suited for my skill set. I was quick, I was fast, I was durable, and the other thing was I was very versatile. So the game actually my skill set catered to the game, and I was able to play with a great organization, and the success was to follow. And that was, again, like I said, I had really, really good teammates, and it made my job easy, and the game was really good to me and my family. And, you know, I've always thought that I have to get back to the game of football, because I could never, ever repay the men that came into my life when I lost my father. I couldn't put a monetary value on it, so I had to serve. And that's what led me into Canyon Springs and doing the other things in the area.
Well, I'll tell you, as the all-time leader in receiving yards, receptions, all-purpose yardage, and kickoff returns, in a sport that was that tough, violent, incredible, and at times you were thinking ahead to becoming a coach. Coach, as we wrap this up now at San Diego State, what's the next chapter in your life? I can't imagine how proud your kids are going to be, your wife, your family, when they see you get inducted into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, but it seems like you have big chapters in front of you as a coach.
You know, I'm really, really grateful for the opportunity that I've spent the last 25 years in Las Vegas, because I've built some great relationships there. My family's always been supportive, my kids, and allowed me to spend my time with other kids, and now they're all grown. One's at Nevada Reno, one graduated from UNLV already. My son just got hired as a DB coach at Central Washington, my youngest son, AJ, and I'm just grateful for the city and the opportunity. And for me, it's next to keep serving. I think I want to be a coordinator and a head coach on a collegiate level, and that's what's next for me. So I'm going to keep putting my time in. I love San Diego State. I love what Rocky Long, our head coach, and I love our mission statement here at San Diego State. I love working with Jeff Ford, and had the opportunity to work with Coach Bobby Houck here as well. And we're doing some good things here, and I want to continue to do that. So, but eventually I want to build my own program, and I want to turn a program around and have success. And I'll keep working and keep my head down and stay humble, and then that opportunity to come, and then when it does, I'll try to seize the moment.
Coach, an absolute honor. I can't wait to shake your hand. See you the night of your induction. We'll have a longer conversation again down the road, but tremendous story. They should do a 30 for 30 on you, your journey. I'm all about storytelling and listening to stories. You have one of the best ones that I've listened to in quite some time. Congratulations on this honor.
I really appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, there he is, Hunky Cooper, who, wow, what a life this guy has had as a great football player. Arena League, college, junior college national champion, and now a coach. And now Mr. Controversy comes in studio, the great Gary Lawless, because whenever I talk to you or whenever we're texting each other, when did your sport of hockey become so controversial? What's going on?
Well, this is it's an amazing run of missed calls and controversial calls. I've never seen anything like this before.
Never. You're saying
never.
This.
Never. Not like this. It's the game 7 call, the major against Cody Eakin, which was a phantom call, and then last night missing a hand pass on an overtime winning goal. Like, just those two right there are enough. This is equitable to what happened to New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely.
And missing the Super Bowl. And the sport has become, hey, it was one thing when it was, you know, your gate would be, you know, $500,000 or whatever. Like, we're talking about, for these owners, when you factor in the gate, merchandise, corporate sponsorship, because every game you play, you go to your corporate sponsors and like they've got a contract and it, you know, so you the contract is for 41 games plus playoffs, it increases with every game.
Absolutely.
Fans, so you're talking about, you know, when a team misses two home dates, minimum $10
million. $10 million. We're talking about Mr. Foley's team, the Vegas Golden Knights, parked outside the postseason now. We could have hosted two games back-to-back, getting ready to go on the road, and you're just multiplying those numbers out in your head.
Yeah, and then with every round, it gets more expensive.
Absolutely.
So if you go to the conference final, so if Vegas had won that game, you know, just let's say they had won and been swept in the next round, only had two more home dates. I'm saying minimum, and I don't know the figures, but I can do the math. It's minimum $10 million for those two dates, and I bet you it's closer to 20. When then you go to the next round, I don't know. Pretty quickly, you get close to $100 million.
That's what's killing me about Boston. Gary Lawless is in studio from the Vegas Golden Knights broadcast team. As a New Yorker, I root against Boston. And now the Bruins are going to the Stanley Cup final. The Red Sox won the World Series. The Patriots have won 6 Super Bowls. The point that you make is you add on all those playoff games and rounds, and I didn't think about it until you said it about the corporate sponsors. You keep going back to your corporate sponsors saying, hey, you got
to
do
this. You don't have to go back. Yeah, it's in the contract.
Yeah, it's in the contract. Yeah. It just comes through. Exactly. It just comes through the bank account.
That's just the way the business works now. And it's great for the corporate sponsor because the spotlight becomes even brighter. So, you know, if they've got a rink board, the value of that rink board is now it becomes a national rink board. And all of a sudden, the numbers on NBC go from, you know, they're doing a 3-share, a 4-share, to a 9-share, to an 11-share. You're getting more eyeballs. You're getting more bang for your buck.
Gary Lawless joins us in studio. So the hand pass, I'm sure there's been hand passes in the crease in the Bobby Orr, Wayne Gretzky, Yzerman era up until last night.
I've never seen this.
Why haven't they fixed it?
Again, a lot of this is like it's a whole bunch of circumstances coming together to give us, you know, it's shining a spotlight on what's wrong, what we're missing. So, like, listen, I read this today and it was really good. The Matt Duchene offside, he was offside by like 5 feet, right? Well, no one's been offside by 5 feet since. Like, none of the calls that have been made have been obvious ones. It's because the linesman, 99.9% of the time, get it right. Or it's very close. And, like, we don't want to be using the slide rule to be determining these. So they put that rule, and they need to take that rule out. We don't need offside review. If anything we've learned since we got offside review is we don't need it. This is, for me, the whole thing. This is common sense. Technology has changed. You're sitting up there in the press box, or you're sitting at the Brick Palace out there in wherever it is. He doesn't tell us where he lives.
I live in Summerlin. I have choices. I live there for now. I'll move around. I'll go wherever the money is. I'll move to Deep Henderson if the Raiders build me a mansion. I'll move out to Deep Henderson for that. I'll do that. I have no problem.
So you're wearing your velvet smoking jacket. You've got your slippers on. You're watching your 74-inch 4K at home. You got a better view than the referee.
I know that.
Right?
Yep.
And then you get to watch it 4 times. And then you get to slow it down. He's got to watch it once in hyper speed and with a bunch of people in his way. Why aren't we giving them help? If something happens and he thinks he sees something or he seems half of something, why can't he skate over to the penalty box and say, and, you know, doesn't have to be Toronto. You can have a guy in the building. There's an extra referee in every building.
You have him in the building upstairs.
This guy gets hurt, right? You know, or the supervisor's in the building. You go up to him and you give him an area with a booth. And, hey, you know what? I think I might have missed something there. Yeah, you did. There was a hand pass. Meyer batted it over to Nyquist, who then slid it over to Carlson. It's not a good goal. Okay, let me see it. Okay, great. Perfect. Skate over to Pete DeBoer, say no goal. Skate over to Craig Berube and say, tell your guys we're going here. We got a game.
I'm going to war war with San Jose fans who liked me. A lot of people used to like me until I moved to Vegas, and now even Raider friends of mine, like friends of mine, and San Jose fans who are friends of mine now are upset because I say to all of them, I go, when you're a fan and you get a break, you get the bad break, just admit it. Now you get people to come back to me, JT, you're wrong, San Jose, they didn't call the delay a game earlier in the game. So how, it balances out. I go, are you out of your mind? They missed a blatant call.
David Perron should have got a minor for delay a game. Absolutely. They're right about that. But that doesn't change happened later on. Hey, if they had to give him the minor and they score, I get that. But this is a game-ending play. This should not happen.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you what, Colin Campbell, the VP, senior VP of hockey operations, went on radio and television in Canada and said, yeah, we got it wrong.
Yeah. There's been a lot of apologies.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Like, apology.
You know what? It doesn't do you any good. And listen, I don't think that the referees want to miss it. I don't think Gary Bettman in the NHL wants to miss it. I think that there are unintended consequences every time you change one of these rules. And you got to be careful. But it's time for a little common sense to be entered into this picture.
Gary Lawless is fabulous. He's in studio with us every week. When we come back, he will give you the most up-to-date information on the Vegas Golden Knights that you could ever get. What's happening overseas? What's happening in the minors? What's happening in the organization? If you are a Vegas Golden Knight fan, I mean, you got info. I'm teasing ahead.
Take a call, too.
Yeah, and he'll take a call. He's like me.
What's the number?
876-1340. 876-1340 if you want to talk to Gary Lawless. Hey, wake up. We got a hockey guy in studio.
The shot. Poke that. Why? Meyer sends in front. Nyquist. Eric Karlsson. Shot. Score! Eric Karlsson gets the shot away. It might have been tipped in front, and it is a Sharks 5-4 win. But the Blues are protesting. They say that might have been gloved in the net.
No, they did not call a hand pass here, folks. They did not call a hand pass. Nobody called it. It wasn't blown dead. They can't call this back. This cannot be challenged. This game is over.
That's actually a good call. Dan Rusinowski on the play-by-play. Gary Lawless in studio, courtesy of the climate control experts. If you want to get through and talk to him before the top of the hour, 876-1340. Hockey fans, 876-1340. What's going on at the minor system here? What's happening with the Wolves, especially the Gulls coming up?
So the Chicago Wolves, they are the American Hockey League affiliate of the Golden Knights. They have they're through to the Western Conference Final. Game one is tomorrow night in Chicago, the Rosemont.
The Rosemont Horizon.
Now it's called, I think it's called Allstate Arena. But back in the day, when DePaul played there,
absolutely,
it was called the Rosemont Horizon. And then they have so much pyrotechnics there. For a while during the Wolves' time in the IHL, it was referred to by a certain newspaper reporter as the giant ashtray because it was so smoky there. I love the Chicago Wolves. There's a ton of history there. It's a really cool organization. And like there was a time on a Friday night out in Rosemont, you'd have 16,000, 15,000, and then downtown at Chicago Stadium, you'd have like 3,000 or 4,000.
How do those fans...
the dollar bill Wirtz days.
How do those fans in Chicago respect and love Vegas, knowing the connection of the players coming
up? You go to a Wolves game, and there's a ton of Golden Knights jerseys there. So it's a really cool affiliation. The Gulls are good. So games one and two are in Chicago, but 3, 4, and 5 are in San Diego, and... we're working on a little package right now. We're going to send some of our content team is going to head down there and catch a game. It'll be a tough assignment to drive down to San Diego for sure. Maybe we'll hit the Taco Tuesday.
You'll have a good time in the gas lamp, the beach cities. You'll love it. Gary Lawless, Climate Control Experts, is the sponsor. We appreciate them jumping on board. The strength of this organization, we heard about Stone and the players who have played overseas. What was that about? What are we seeing with them? What's the production like?
Yeah, well, they're on fire, actually. They're all playing really well. And this is a really interesting thing. In 2014, I went to Sochi for the Olympics, and Blake Wheeler was playing for the Winnipeg Jets, and he was just, you know, just on the verge of being a pretty good player. He was the last forward invited, and Dan Bylsma didn't play him until almost the last game. And then once Wheeler played, he proved he should have been on their in their top six. But he left there, and his eyes were open. He was like, these are the best players in the world, and I'm as good as all of them. I'm better than most of them. And then I think he saw some of their habits and some of their competition, like the level of competition they brought to every day to practice. He went back. He's been amongst the top five wingers in the game ever since. And for a guy like Shea Theodore to go over there, and all of a sudden he's getting top six, top 4 minutes playing for Team Canada, his eyes are going to be open. He's going to be like, this is how good I am. I'm really good. And that will translate when he comes back to camp next year. He'll have an extra level of confidence. For Jonathan Marchessault, who's never played for Canada before, never worn the Maple Leaf. Theodore wore it as a junior. Stone wore it as a junior. Stone wore it, won a gold for Canada at the Worlds in 2016. For Marchessault, this a guy who's had to claw for everything, you know, just kind of always been undersized and looked over and had to fight for everything he got. This will be an affirmation of everything he's fought for, but it will tell him, I can play at this level. There's more for me. And, you know, for me, Jonathan has, there's so much about his game, but he's got to play at that really, really high pace, and that he'll have someone else tell him that. Alain Vigneault will tell him at some point in time during this tournament, what you just gave me isn't good enough. Like, if you play at 85%, you're no good to me. And hearing it from someone else, I think it will really drive him home. He's going to be a better player next year for it.
Gary Lawless joins us in studio from the Vegas Golden Knights broadcast team. So after the loss to the Sharks are still playing. Boston on the other side. It looks to me like Carolina's dead. What are you most optimistic about from talking to players, the players who are still in town, those who are playing, you mentioned overseas, the minors, and the organization from top to bottom? What's the mindset during what we believe is downtime, but it's actually not?
Well, no, I think that, you know, some guys are getting healthy. Other guys, you know, will have taken this opportunity and done a reset. But I think really this is the hunger. They're going to look at this and say, like, we probably should have gone to the final.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should have gone to the Western Conference final for sure, and we didn't. So we've got to figure out, we've got to get better. And that's the other thing. You know, you have to look at Colorado and what they did against San Jose and say to yourself, well, they're not taking a step backward. They're going to be, Nathan MacKinnon, all these guys, they're going to be better next year. They're going to make a step. So we have to make a step forward. This is, I hate using the shark analogy, but keep moving or you're dead. And you have to keep moving forward. And this is a key offseason for the Golden Knights.
Everybody that I'm hearing talk about, from just being in the building, being around the organization, everybody seems like they took the bad beat well. And everybody thinks this is a team that's going to go to multiple cups. We talked about it last time you were here. They should win one. They'd like to go to one. But I'm also hearing that they believe that the infrastructure set up to do this. They should be a dominant, very good, above average hockey team for a long time, 3, 4, 5 years.
I believe
on
so.
Paper.
You know, yeah, I think Fleury is still still at the top of his game. I do believe they have to, you know, I don't think he should play as much as he played this year. Tuukka Rask right now is the hottest goalie in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah.
He played less than he ever had in his career. And he has said publicly, the reason I'm playing so good right now is because I'm fresh. And if you remember, last year, Fleury got injured, missed all those games. He only played, I don't have the number right in front of me, I believe around 45. 45 or 48 in the regular season. And that, you know, think how good he was against L.A., against San Jose and against Winnipeg. Like, it was, there's got to be a little bit of a recalibration in the number of games.
It's tough, and you cover professional sports. It's tough to pay athletes who are pros the highest amount of money, the all-stars, and say that you're healthy and you're going to rest. We have days off. We have travel days, certain days. When you start giving athletes, and goalies are different, but when you see LeBron James or another guy get a night off and there's 18,000 people in the arena and they're healthy, fans don't like that.
Goalies are like pitchers.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, you know, there's the backup is the relief pitcher for a reason. The amount of strain and mental pressure on a goalie in the National Hockey League, like it's impossible to expect him to play 100 games a year, which so is what if you played 82 and then you played 16 to 28 in the playoffs, like there's just no chance. No chance.
You're going to T-Bones tonight for dinner at Red Rock.
Come on. Don't be telling anyone this.
This is amazing. The experience you're going to have tonight from beginning, middle, end. Pace yourself. The wine list is extraordinary. The crab appetizers. I've never had anything but a perfect steak there.
I don't have Brick Bank.
You have great
delving into the wine list.
You're going to have an amazing meal tonight.
Diet Coke with ice, please.
But if you end up going on the San Diego, trip, get to the beach. Go to the Hotel Del Coronado. Get to the Gaslamp downtown.
I stayed at L'Auberge in Del Mar a couple years ago.
L'Auberge's track season is right around the corner, so that's where getting a room for track season there is impossible. But you're getting around, my friend, and we want to thank climate control experts for stepping up and bringing you into the studio every week.
This is the time to dial up climate control experts because the heat hasn't hit, and you don't want to get caught that first day that it's 108, 110, 112, 113 without your air conditioner running properly. Call them now. Get it serviced. Be ahead of the game.
Be ahead of the game because when that air conditioner breaks down and you got a house full of people, it's ugly.
That's never happened to me, man.
Well, it's never going to happen to you because of climate control experts. We appreciate Gary Lawless coming in. Where can everybody find you? I know you're tweeting back and forth with the fans, and you're also trying to guide me.
We need to do a show.
Yeah, I'm ready for it.
JT's ridiculous tweets. JT's preposterous tweets. JT's indefensible tweets. We need to do this.
But there's no profanity and there's no pictures.
There's nothing crazy. It's your takes.
Well, look, when you have a bunch of takes, not all of them can be super red hot all the time. You know why you're not used to me? You're not used to a guy who live tweets as much as me and doesn't wait for the next day after the game's been figured out.
What are you talking about? I tweet live. On deadline for my whole career.
I live tweet. Live tweeting is bold. You need to have courage to live tweet.
It's preposterous.
Gary Lawless. We appreciate him coming in. Eric Winalda, next hour in studio.